on this very full breathing opening, I'm welcoming BBS first as our wonderful friend, I would say also very special support system, which allow us to bring our thoughts in a very spontaneous and not always perhaps prepared way. But that's exactly why I admire the station, that they give all of us a full opportunity to express ourselves with our individuality. And on this note, I like to introduce my guest, who is indeed striking individuality and profound way of thinking, totally conquered my soul and my mind. And the name of this person is Dr. Shefali Sabari. How are you? And welcome to BBS and to all of us.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
I will take a few minutes because I would say, honestly, it will take quite a few hours just to touch base about your life, about your gift. So I hope that I will do some justice and will touch upon some of your special qualities, which I was privileged to get close to reading your book. And before, I just like to introduce your credentials, and they are coming from clinical psychology from Columbia University, New York. You also have very, very unique combination and blend of having Eastern mindfulness quality with knowledge and feeling for Western psychology. I would add here a little bit, being myself Eastern European mindfulness, I certainly had a very fascinating time to get acquainted with your way of thinking and your way of expressing yourself in your book. Also, I need to add that you do have practice in New York, which I'm sure you will describe to us in great details. But I also cannot wait and to express my tremendous admiration regarding your book.
Oh,
I felt that you almost coming like a painter of human soul, an architect of human mind. I felt that this book, which has a name Conscious Parent, is addressing so many issues. And in fact, I'm becoming very impatient, and in one breath, I like to say that indeed this book equally addressing the issue regarding us as adults, some of which are ready to be a parent, and some of us which needs to become the parent. And this book is written with emotional bravery, I found, with very uncompromising honesty and tremendous refinement. Well, I hope I, at least I tried to give some kind of a sense of philosophical nature of your book. And on this note, it is my greatest pleasure and privilege to invite to our conversation Dr. Shefali, who kindly allow me to call her by her first name, and I understand that her clients and her patients also calling her this by this name. So I'm becoming a little bit cozy here, and at this moment, Dr. Shefali, please tell us a little bit about yourself, about your life, about your true expectations of your own accomplishments.
Oh, thank you for the lovely introduction. That was very, very kind of you. So as you said, I am a licensed clinical psychologist here in New York with a training in Western psychology from Columbia University. But in addition, as you mentioned, I have a background in Eastern mindfulness. Having grown up in the East, in India, I was exposed to Eastern philosophical thinking at an early age, and it is this Eastern thought and thinking process that I try to integrate in my therapeutic work with clients and in my writings about parenting. So as you spoke about this book, The Conscious Parent, which is coming out, I'm very excited to announce, in the next 6 to 8 weeks, is a book that really hones in and focuses on the conscious-driven potential of the parenting journey for the parent. You know, most of the books out there on parenting really focus on how to raise a perfect child or how to best treat our children, but few books really focus on what the parent needs to go through developmentally and spiritually and emotionally to become the best parent they can be for the child that they raise. So this book really is about the raising of the parent and only secondarily about the raising of the child, because I really believe that parenting is a call for us parents to rise to an elevated state of consciousness, and our children allow us to do that. And we'll talk more about the different ways our children help us and can invite us to a greater level of consciousness as the show proceeds.
Yes, exactly. And that invitation I'm very much looking forward to, because indeed the book is so so explicitly open to every possible angle of difficulties. And I do not mean sound negative. I do not mean sound even depressing. But there is a thin line between being objective and find your own problems with a tremendous sadness, and something which we need to be very responsible and aware of connecting to our children, because they are inevitably becoming a baggage carrier of things which we could not resolve with our own life. And actually, this vicious cycle is so powerful that I believe that sometimes amount of psychologists and psychiatrists can be greatly diminished if we are, as a parent, will be more aware who we are and start to help and to connect to our children from our genuine point of view. Because after all, who should know better and closer our children than we are parents?
Exactly. And it is this knowing, though, you know, as when we engage in the parenting journey and we become parents, we believe we, because of our greater age and greater power, automatically know certain things. And of course, we do know a lot more than our children can know, but only perhaps on one level. When we become parents, then, our knowing needs to extend beyond the material level knowing and go deeper to a more spiritual and introspective based knowing. And it is here that our children provide us with the greatest opportunities for change. Because if we stay stuck at the knowing level that's just the material knowing, you know, I know more about life, I'm greater than, then we will get stuck in an equation that is control-based and power-driven rather than a truly mutually restorative relationship. When we then dip into a different kind of knowing and begin to understand that our children are our spiritual partners, always showing us the way in which we have yet to grow, then we begin to know all that we don't know and begin to understand all that we don't yet understand. And it is here then that we open ourselves to a true transformation. So again, you know, it's when we parents begin to open ourselves to the understanding that all that we knew, and we can still continue to know that, is just at one level. And now becoming parents, we have the opportunity to go to levels that we have never gone to before within our psyche, because our children take us there, then we begin to operate at a very different, from a very different place, a different kind of knowing. And in this state, in this level, our children become our partners. And it is here that the parent and child can begin to walk differently towards a different kind of spiritual future than we ordinarily would have. So the book really speaks explicitly to how the parent can go to this deeper place of awareness and knowing and allow our children to lead us.
I'm not sure if you will agree with me, but I found this fascinating progression, at least from my perception, that our children are not quite aware to what extent they are becoming our teacher, but our responsibility indeed to become aware of it. So as much as children are subconsciously sending us messages, we should be extremely conscious in receiving the message.
Exactly. You know, our children are extremely vulnerable to our adult ways, and therefore the greatest prey to our unforgiving egos. You know, our egos are unremitting. We will unleash our egos wherever we can, and who better or easier to unleash our egos upon than our children? And it is here that the danger of unconscious parenting lies. So, yes, our children come to us helpless and vulnerable, and just because they are helpless and vulnerable, this does not mean that we can then unleash our uncontrollable egos onto them. In fact, it is because of their helplessness and vulnerability that we are called upon to a greater sense of responsibility, respect, and honoring, and a greater opportunity to unhook and detach from our egos. So, just because they are helpless, and our natural tendency is to unleash our ego, it is precisely here that we're given our greatest spiritual opportunity to detach from the ego. So it is a fine line in understanding how this really works, and we can talk about it more if time permits. But suffice it to say for now that it is in the paradoxical juxtaposition of their helplessness which invites a greater unconsciousness in most of us, that it is our responsibility really not to fall prey to that unconsciousness. And it is with their most helpless of spirits and the most vulnerable of spirits that we face a greater responsibility to detach from that unremitting ego that we have and take great care and consciousness in how we deal with our children. Because if we were completely unconscious, we could just run amok with our children and project all our unconscious baggage onto them because they can't speak, at least in their early years. They don't know what's hitting them. But it is here, in the most delicate of dynamics between parent and child, that we must rise to a higher calling and sidestep that often cruel and often controlling and often dominating ego and really surrender to a different way of relating to our children.
This ego thing, I call it a worst vitamin, worst human vitamin. It plays such a negative, terribly powerful role, unfortunately, in many phases of life, children or adult, especially in artistic profession. And you pointed it with a very powerful clarity. And I think, indeed, the first step, if we can define with all this complexity of emotions and experiences, but if we can define the first step, at least to think about, is to put our ego as a second choice. And I'm saying this facetiously because we cannot get rid of it. It's a part of human nature. But at least if we will not use it as a first power, at least know, yes, it's there. Yes, I cannot avoid it. But don't use it as the most powerful weapon. The most powerful weapon should be gentle, clear, truthful, and very sincere approach. I think the first thing as a parent, we should not be afraid to be wrong and tell our children that we are wrong. We like to know your opinion on this. We like to share our thoughts as soon as child starts to speak.
Sure. You know, what you said is so true. We cannot get, quote unquote, rid of our ego, and that is not the path of the one who tries to be conscious. A conscious parent understands that the ego will always be an inevitable factor in the dynamics that they have with their children. In fact, the ego is inevitable. It is, as you said, part of human nature. But how do we then, as you questioned, sidestep the ego, detach from the ego, and operate from a more authentic state of relatedness with our children? Because when we operate from ego, we are not operating either in the present or truly in relation to the spirit that's budding within our child. When we operate from ego, we're really operating from our own past conditioning. And that's where the danger lies. Because we no longer are in the present moment, alive, operating from spirit to spirit, relating from true inner nature to our children's true inner nature. Instead, when we are blinded by ego, we are really operating from the voices and the conditioning and the messages from generations past, and we are no longer in the present moment. That's why when we operate from ego, we really rob ourselves from the greatest opportunity to be in the present. And then, of course, we rob our children from the opportunity to relate to us and relate to them, to themselves in the present moment. So the ego can get dangerous when it is blind. So our first step as conscious parents is to try to become aware of the ego when it is in operation, not to necessarily get rid of it, because as we talked about, we cannot get rid of it, but we can become aware when it raises its dangerous a threatening lure, you know, when it raises its power, when it threatens the relationship beyond what it needs to, we must become aware of it. And that awareness in itself has the power to create a shift in the dynamic between parent and child, because awareness creates a pause, and pause creates a state of stillness, a state of spaciousness between parent and child. And it is this space that then helps shift the dynamic from its stuck place to a more fluid place, and creates a sense of flow between parent and child.
I feel that perhaps the idea of oneness can be introduced to our conversation. But even before that, I like to make one point about humanity, just to take a little bit on a bigger picture what you're talking about, because your profound description of human nature with the psychology certainly makes one think what kind of a society we're living in, what are particular obstacles we're facing today, which was not as challenging maybe 50 or 70 years ago. I like to bring words of Albert Einstein, because I feel in one way it complements our conversation, but also it expresses its universal meaning of what you're talking about. And please feel disagree with this, or perhaps you can be more detailed and comment on this. So his thought about humanity is follow. The true value of human being is determined by the measure and the sense in which they have obtained liberation from the self. We shall require a substantially new manner of thinking if humanity is to survive. I'd like to know your comment on that.
Well, I think perhaps he's speaking to the need for a shift in consciousness. And I think there is no greater need today in our world than a parental shift in consciousness and a parental transformation. And as he talked about, understanding the self in order to then create detachment from the ego is imperative if we are truly to create that oneness that you were alluding to. You know, we often go about our lives relating to each other as if we are all living separate lives, little understanding that we are all really one, and that every person we encounter is a mirror of our internal state. There is no other, really, because everybody is created within the mind and within the workings of our psyche. So who is an other is a deeply philosophical question, but one that has bearing on our conversation, because when we relate with children, we often believe it is our children's fault, or we can do this to them. But there is no them, or there is no child per se, because that child often simply exists in our mind, in our psyche, and in the workings of our ego. Therefore, our job as parents is to understand that we must detach from the workings of our ego and our mind in order to truly appreciate who our child really is. You know, how much time do we as parents spend on really imagining and understanding and relating to who our children really are? You know, who is our child? What does our child really want? What does our child really like? So often we go about the task of parenting in that knowing place I was talking about, that superior place, and we simply presume we know who and what our children should be like. And it is here that we miss the true authentic nature of our children. And when we do this, we actually don't allow our children to rise to their true potential. Instead, we impose the workings of our ego, the workings of our psyche, and our sense of other onto them. And we create this separation, we create this sense of severance with our inner spirit, and then our children take that on with them in the world, and they relate to others with this sense of otherness. And that's why dysfunction and emotional stuntedness exists in the world today. You know, there's so much psychiatric illness and so much unhappiness because we all are operating out of the sense of otherness. You know, we all feel the sense of separation with each other instead of a state of oneness. And I think Einstein was speaking to the need for all of us to rise above our current state of operation, our current state of egoness, and find a new way of relating to each other where we truly can commune with each other's spirits and operate from a state of oneness, understanding that we all are one, we all are reflections of each other, and there is no enemy out there.
I totally, profoundly agree with you. I will introduce another dimension, and highly subjectively, I will make a little point here, but I will stress it's a highly subjective. I will talk about fear. I think if parent is aware of his fear to face himself or herself, I think this is a first step in the right direction, because when ego is a moving force, then person is absolutely blind. It's total prison. But when there is a slight feeling of fear to find out who I am, why I'm afraid to idolize my child's world, I think it's a step in the right direction. I wanted to interrupt myself, and I think we have a caller on the line. So, Dr. Shefali, can I kindly ask you to postpone your response, and we will give an opportunity to our caller to speak to us.
Hello?
Yes, hi. I'm so, oh, that's great that I got through. Dr. Shefali?
Yes, hi.
Yes, hi. My name is Chris from New York, and I'm completely fascinated by your book. It's been a tremendous help in handling both my children. I'm a busy mother of two, of a 5-year-old and a 20-month-old. And I have to tell you that I am in constant conflict with my 5-year-old. She's constantly challenging me, and it's really has put a lot of stress in trying to deal with her, and also lots of stress in the evening. So I was just wondering how you handle conflict mindfully.
Well, you know, that's such a typical scenario that you painted, because there's so many of us dealing with, you know, either 5-year-olds or 15-year-olds. It really doesn't matter how old one's child is when one engages in conflict with them, because underlying every conflictual situation is basically the same dynamic. And the dynamic really that gets set up between parents and children in conflict situations is a I versus you dynamic. And when this dynamic sets itself up, it stays stuck because of the operation of the parental ego, which then blinds the parent from seeing the true essence of the child. So if you can reflect on the situations where you typically fall into conflict with your child, you will see that it's usually because you are finding yourself stuck in a position of I versus you, me versus you. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, we're all here. Can you hear us?
Oh, I'm sorry. I lost the end part of that, of what you just said, Dr. Shefali.
No problem. I'll repeat what I just said. What I was alluding to is that when we typically find ourselves in conflictual situations with our children, it's because we get stuck in a dynamic that's rigid and based in ego. It's based in the parent thinking that they are absolutely right and their will must be followed. And you can reflect on the situations where you typically fall into conflict with your child, and you may get to see that it could be because you're being a bit too invested in the way things should be instead of truly listening to the needs of your child. Children defy us not only because they are naturally rebellious at times, but also because they are speaking to an unmet need, and they simply do not know how to express that need. But because we parents often are operating out of the hierarchy of control and power, we barely can listen to the need, and instead, all we care about is that our will and our dictates should be followed. It is here that conflict gets to be dysfunctional and does not offer opportunity for change. So my suggestion to you would be to analyze and to introspect why it is that you're finding yourself stuck, and to really look at your own desire to be followed and your own need to control the dynamic with your child. Perhaps if you could surrender that just for a minute and create some sense of space around your need to be followed, you may find that you could let go of most of what you and your five-year-old are in conflict about.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I have one more question. How do you suggest I would go about uncovering this need of my child? And I'm not saying it in a timely manner. I mean, I'm tremendously busy, and I'm just wondering, I mean, are there some tips that I may be able to use to help uncover my child's needs in that
Absolutely.
Respect?
Absolutely. The first step would be to uncover what your triggers are. The minute you can identify your triggers, so is it her whiny voice, or is it the way she looks at you, is it her constant tantruming, find out what your trigger is. Mm-hmm. The next step is you cannot react in the moment. In that moment, perhaps you can create a pause. And it is in that pause, as simplistic as it sounds, that there is vital growth that can occur. Because the minute the parent pauses and surrenders to the will of the child, just for a moment, then the parent perhaps can begin to hear what the child is saying, even though the child in its outward manifestation is tantruming and screaming or kicking and biting. But the parent can then turn the ear inward and then begin to ask the child, you know, what can I do to meet your need in the moment? It is all in the shift of perspective. It's an energetic shift that the parent undergoes that can cause volumes of change within the child. You know, we often enter conflictual situations with an I am right attitude and my way is the only way attitude. And it is just in this energy that the child immediately hardens themselves up, and the parent is already hardened in their ego stance. The child gets hardened as well, and then the heads begin to butt. But the minute the parent can relax and surrender and cause a state of stillness and space between parent and child, the child will find itself melting as well. You know, so I always ask parents, can you first join with your child? you know, first listen to the emotion behind the whining, behind the tantruming. You know, say things like, I hear you're upset. I can see that you're upset. I can see that mommy is not listening to you. I can see that you're trying to say something to me and I'm not understanding. I get you. Or you can say something like, you know, can we both just take a deep breath and not say anything and just breathe together? These are different ways of creating that pause, that state of stillness that both need to engage with each other on a more genuine and authentic level. And the minute this pause is created, you will see that the energies will shift and both can be more receptive to each other.
Yeah, I think these are very good tips. Thank
you. So try it out the next time you enter into conflict with your child.
However,
thank you very much.
Dr. Shefali, perhaps our caller like to know where you can continue your advice, and if you can address your location of your practice and give a telephone number or whatever, which will help caller to continue her communication with you.
Sure, that'll be very helpful, I'm sure. My website is www.globalid.com. That's GLOBALID.com. And once you're on the website, you can get my phone number and contact information. I will also direct listeners to the Namaste Publishing website, where you can get more information on my book and read my parenting blog and get all sorts of wonderful tips on how to parent more consciously.
Well, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. Yeah. Thank you for calling.
And thank you for calling from myself as well. And I like to bring one thought before we'll take a little break for our music touch. You just gave a very interesting and detailed interpretation of possibility, what taking place between this mother and the child. I noticed, and I really admire that very much in your book, when you said that there is no really particular strategies or particularly artificial tactics. It is all about a real thing, and the real thing is to become conscious of what being grounded for so many, many years. And I like to ask you, do you share particularly a special approach for people like this caller who is extremely busy and must go by the dimension of a quality time rather than a quantity time? Any thoughts you can share about that?
Absolutely. I myself am a working mother, so I completely can empathize with parents who are always on the go. And my advice to all of us, including myself, is that when we're with our children, they really deserve our complete and total presence. And by presence, I mean our body, mind, and soul being attuned to theirs. You know, so often we are with our children, but we are barely there. We're there, you know, in the body, but really not attuned to who it is they are, what it is they're saying. We don't look into their eyes deep enough, we don't hear their voice closely enough, and we don't sit with them with a state of attentive receptivity. And it is, you know, even if we can do this with our children for 5 or 10 minutes a day, it can change the entire dynamic with our children. They deserve our undivided, open, attuned state of receptivity. And by receptivity, I mean, you know, not to engage with them with the attention that we think they need or we think they should need, but really open and receiving of their energy wherever it may be. You know, so for 10 minutes a day to put aside our agenda, to put aside our shoulds and our musts and our and all our parental dictates and open ourselves up to who it is our child is in the moment, and relate to them with complete non-judgmental acceptance. This is a place that all of us parents could start for just 5 or 10 minutes a day. That's all our children and especially as they grow older, really need from us. You know, of course, when they're younger, they need more of our time and energy. But as they grow older, you know, after 5 or 7 or 8, they just need our presence. They don't need us to lecture them or tell them what they're doing wrong or instruct them or command them. They need our attuned, open, engaged receptivity.
I will borrow one term. I would say that we need to meditate in the presence of our children, making them aware of our very close, perhaps extremely speechless, but very meaningful and profoundly touching presence that they will share and they will treasure, and perhaps they will look forward to these 5 to 10 minutes a day, which you so beautifully described. I'd like to introduce on this note for us to get an opportunity to think and to reflect on what you just expressed. And I cannot find a better piece of abstract expression, which hopefully all of us will relate to. And, of course, music is our dearest friend, and we do spend quite a bit of time with music on a daily basis. And I like to introduce a very beautiful, talented composer. His name is Julian Lambert, who did write the music with a thought in mind, with some image of this human meditation. I'm inviting Dr. Shefali, myself, and whoever is listening to us to this little musical introduction. This final chord, I like to introduce another caller. I just had noticed that Lee is on the line and wants to speak to Dr. Shefali. Lee, if you are on the line, please express yourself.
Yes, hi, this is Lee.
Hi, Lee. How are you?
Good, thank you. I'm so glad I'm having the opportunity to speak with you. I was wondering if I might actually pose a question to you.
Sure, absolutely.
So I'm calling. I'm the mother of a 16-year-old teenager. She's a girl. And I was wondering, you know, what suggestions you might have for someone like me, and I'm sure I'm not the only person in this situation, in terms of dealing with, you know, an adolescent child who, no matter what techniques I might use in trying to communicate with her, you know, she seems to reject everything. I feel like I cannot get through, and I was hoping perhaps to gain some insight from you.
Sure. You know, when adolescent hits the household, most parents complain of, you know, losing their children to, you know, little monster people who take over the house and their children become no longer recognizable to them. So you're not alone in feeling like this. You know, this often happens when our children, for the first time, begin to get a taste of their autonomy and their sense of empowerment. And their first tendency then is to move away from us parents. And when they do so, they often do so in a cruel manner because they don't know any other way to do it. So it seems very, very personal to us parents when they move away from us. We feel, like you said, that they reject us. But in essence, our children are not rejecting us. They are finding who it is they are, and they're moving towards their own personhood. But when they do this, our egos often take a real blowing. And that's why in so many homes across the world, when teenagehood hits, it is truly a war zone. Because we parents take it very, very personally. Our egos get entangled, and we cannot tolerate our children separating from us. It creates a sense of anxiety, a sense of disempowerment within us, a lack of control, and we want to establish the previous hierarchy that used to exist until they became teenagers. We want to feel more powerful, but we have to come to realize that our children are no longer ours to possess in the same way that we did when they were younger. And we need to detach from that over-empowering ego and move from center stage to almost a supporting cast now. You know, we are no longer the center of our children's eyes. And this is a humbling experience for most parents. You know, we take it very hard when our children move away and suddenly want to be with their friends more than they want to be with us. They get embarrassed by who we are. So our egos take a real blowing, and I think this is the fundamental reason why most of us in teenagehood get into real conflicts with our children, because we can't tolerate no longer being the know-all and be-all and end-all of our children's lives.
I agree with you. I don't think you could have sort of articulated more, you know, my feelings, and thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. This time will pass, and you will come back to a true kinship with your child, but it's just time to loosen the hold a little bit and let her fly free and not take it personally.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling.
And thank you for calling from me as well. Dr. Shefali, I cannot resist and to jump into some just a wonderful sentiment and gesture of your own daughter, because that's how actually you open in your book. If you permit me to make my own analogy, and I will, I guarantee I will put you and whoever is listening to us in somewhat suspense, but you will step in and you will clear the air, and hopefully you will understand where I'm coming from. So without really telling exactly how you start in your book, and you will do so much better job than I am, I will just express my own analogy. Historically, regardless how non-traditional and ridiculous it sounds, we are perhaps can imagine that if Queen and the king will be wearing only each half of their crown, it will symbolize in deeper their unity and sharing. And the reason I'm saying this, because the way you open your book is indeed expressing charming gesture of your daughter who separated a dollar bill putting one half under your pillow and another half under the pillow of her father. If I understood this correctly, would you please clarify this? But also, if you can bring some psychologically profound perception of a young child connecting to her own parents and correcting actually certain lack of equality between people.
Right. Thank you for bringing up that example, because and I use it to open the book because it was such a profound example to speak to so many things that we're talking about. So let me just start with the concrete example first. So, you know, it was early morning and my daughter came excitedly to our bedroom and said, you know, announced to my husband and myself that the fairy who used to visit her every week had now visited us, and we should look under our pillow because there's such a precious gift under the pillow. And so I put my hands under the pillow and I removed a dollar note that was split in half, and the other half was under my husband's pillow. So she had used the same symbolism of a fairy visiting and had extracted so much pleasure from that ritual that we did with her that she now chose to return the favor. And all along I thought that she really believed in the fairy until that morning. And she, you know, this example has so much symbolism to it because she not only returned the favor and shared the excitement and bestowed us with a little bit of childhood glee, but she also manifested her own inner fairy and gave us back. And then lastly, you know, when I saw the dollar bill cut in half, it was a profound moment because I could see that I could have reacted to her in any of two ways. One of the ways being ego-based and the other one being soul-based. And if I had chosen to respond to her based on the ego, I would have told her something like, oh, thank you very much, but, you know, we don't cut dollar bills in half and money is not to be wasted like this. And I would have embarked on, an hour-long lecture on why she shouldn't have done what she had done. Yet, I chose to respond to her based on her soul and the authenticity with which she had delivered the message. And when I did so, when I chose to relinquish the ego, surrender the ego, let go of my need to lecture and dominate and be in the knowing, and instead truly appreciate where she was coming from in her soul, then this moment became truly a united moment, a moment of oneness, and a moment that really allowed her to flourish and feel empowered, feel met, feel understood, and truly allowed us to become kindred spirits in that moment. So it was a very profound example where I could see the ego raise its ugly head, and thankfully I chose to relinquish the ego in that moment. You know, there are many moments when I forget and I get overpowered by the ego, but that was one moment where I chose to follow the way of the soul.
And you truly listened to her heartbeat, joining with your own.
Exactly.
And I like to bring this very bitter subject, working myself for over 40 years, I hate to say this number, with young children and some performing adults. I have to say that the quality of our world is so difficult to comprehend in young child age. It's almost a punishment to be a child because the world is so material. It is so fast. And our role as a parent, I think, greatly elevated in the present modern times, because indeed we still need to instill this human, spiritual, and very profound emotional basis. And only with that, they will develop proper understanding of material values. I don't know if I convey the message, which basically I wanted to say in another words, that the foundation of humanity in a little child will develop in a strong, beautiful rose and will sustain any kind of a hurricane in life, if indeed it nourished by the parents, family, friends, then school, and then after that base, they will be ready to face the material world.
Absolutely. You know, what you're speaking to is the pervasive and vital need for our children to become emotionally literate. Because it is through the emotional world, it is through the navigation of their emotional world that they will be able to sustain the tragedies or traumas or hardships of their life. You know, I often tell parents, you know, don't think of parenting as raising a healthy child necessarily, but instead look at it as a more global understanding of raising an healthy adult, because this is a lifelong sowing of the seed that we are doing. You know, this is not just temporarily to get the A in high school or to get to Harvard or to Yale. This is about raising an adult who can sustain relationships with compassion, lead a life with purpose, and raise their own children with a sense of inner resolute sturdiness. So absolutely, it is when we can teach our children to stay in the present moment, to stay in their bodies, to live connected to their inner beings, that they will then take this wherever they go in life, and then the material and the technological will become just moments of the day rather than the addictions that they're becoming today. You know, our world is becoming so fast-paced and our children are growing up so heavily addicted to all things external that it is little wonder that when they grow up, they can't sustain intimate relationships and they fall to substance abuse or they fall to darker and deeper depressions. It's because they don't have a resolute sense of inner self to fall back on. So the greatest gift we can give to our children is to allow them to understand who it is they already are. And our children come with this understanding. It is just our responsibility to help them cultivate it and to elevate it sometimes. But they already are brimming full with an inner sense of connection. You know, it is we parents who sever their inner sense of connection.
If you will permit, we will connect to another piece of music, which indeed was written with dedication to children. I'm not sure I will pronounce very well the name of that piece. I will do my best. It sounds Hoppity Hop from the Children's Suite, written by Julian Lampert. So I will hope that Dr. Shefali will take a little breath. And I will invite this piece of music before our continuation of conversation. I hope we're well refreshed, and we're coming back to our very special discussion with very gifted person who devoted her life to one of the most sensitive and powerful themes of our life, of our future. It's our children and us parents, and it's very philosophical measure where parents coming from and children continue or vice versa I'm again inviting Dr. Shefali Tsapari to continue our conversation. And perhaps, Dr. Shefali, you can tell our listeners again where they can find you, because I'm sure a lot of them will want to continue to have your advice, your evaluation, and I would say extremely practical approach to our modern problems.
Sure. They can find me on my website, which is www.globalid.com, and that's spelled GLOBALID.com. Alternatively, they can visit me at the Namaste Publishing website, and that is spelled NAMASTE Publishing.com. And once they're in the website, they will find volumes of great information on consciousness, but they can look me up under authors and speakers and read up more on my book and even pre-order the book, The Conscious Parent, Empowering Ourselves, Transforming Our Children, on the website. It's available for pre-order, I think, even as we speak.
Wonderful. Thank you. Can I ask you to share with us a little personal information? What shaped your mind, as I was wondering in the very beginning, and almost provoke you to touch such a profound subject? I'm sure with your personal experiences, whatever you're comfortable to share with us, your life with profession, your life with life of your own events. What is your pleasures? What is your hobby away from work?
Oh, well, let me answer the first part of your question as to what inspired me to
I'm
write
sorry.
This book. No, that's okay.
I'm so grounded. I'm a little overly excited to ask questions in such a
no,
manner.
That's fine. You know, upon becoming a mother, I realized how little there was in terms of the literature out there that really addressed the profound spiritual transformation that we go through upon becoming parents. And I saw, you know, even though I was a practitioner of mindfulness and meditation, that my ego was even more in operation upon becoming a parent. And I wanted to find ways to detach from this ego, to sidestep the ego, and find ways to relate to my child on a more authentic level. So it was really my own struggles as a parent and my own imperfections, my own ego-based needs that I became aware of that led me to question, you know, the reasons why the ego was more in operation in the parenting journey, and then look for ways to answer these questions for other parents and myself to extricate ourselves from the blind conditioning from our past. So I was really inspired by my own folly, by my own hardships as a parent, my own personal struggles. You know, when I saw how hard it was for me to sit still, how hard it was for me to detach from the ego and not impose my own shoulds and wants and needs onto my child, that I was inspired to begin thinking about the subject and write about it. So that's the motivation behind the book. And in terms of, you know, who I am or my hobbies, you know, I'm very, very driven by all things that relate to personal growth and fulfillment. And I'm always seeking different ways to become more in tune with myself. So anything that takes me closer to the spirit in terms of meditation, mindfulness, yoga, walking in nature, hiking, these are the things that I derive the most pleasure from. And, of course, reading and listening to other great teachers really move and inspire me. You know, traveling, I believe, when we travel the world, we begin to really come in close contact with our oneness, and we can learn from indigenous cultures. You know, I love to take my daughter back to India, where she can get more in touch with seemingly different people, but understanding then that in our core we are so similar and we are one. So these are the few things that drive me and create great passion within me.
a wonderful point you made about travel, and I think this is most natural and forceful way to merge between unconsciousness and consciousness, because we inevitably faced suddenly with new impressions and we're trying to connect. And I personally feel that the more connections we can make in life, the more powerful and more refined we becoming as an individual.
Absolutely. I really like the way you put it, because when we travel, we have to suspend our ego, you know, all that we knew to be dear and familiar. You know, to be a truly successful traveler where we merge with the culture we are traveling in, it takes a successful detachment from the ego and suspension of all states of prior knowing. So I really like the way you put it, that traveling really affords one a great opportunity to enter that state of inner spaciousness and invitation to change.
Well, coming back to our reality, it is unfortunate that parenting becoming reality before parent is actually a parent. My mother used to say when children are parents, this is not a good choice. I feel that when young parent become a parent, it's and not prepared, it's almost like to go shopping for food when your guests already at the table.
Yeah.
And it is very hard question, but I will give you tremendous credit. It goes way beyond any compliment that your book actually inspiring to merge to this process as quickly as possible and to fill the gap before and after, before I'm a parent and after I'm a parent. Could you share with us, in fact, some intricate points and emotional trigger which will provoke us become quick parent, if I may say?
Sorry, maybe I'm not understanding your question. So you want me to speak to how it is that we can quickly understand the few steps it takes to become a conscious parent?
Exactly right, yes.
Okay, and it's a good place to wind down the show as well, because we can leave the listeners with some concrete tools that they can begin the journey on. Like you said, parenting is inordinately challenging, no matter how or when one embarks on it, how rich or poor, it doesn't matter, because the spiritual struggles one encounters upon becoming a parent are simply incomparable. One can hardly prepare for it. You know, so yes, it is, no matter what age we are at, it is almost like the guests are at the table. So we better do our work fast. And this is true for even the most seasoned adults. We all need to do our work very, very fast upon becoming parents, because we quickly realize how monumental our shadow of the ego is. So the quick steps to becoming a conscious parent are to realize really, really profoundly, deeply, and as quickly as possible that this journey will not be a successful one or a fulfilling one unless one realizes that it is only secondarily about the child and first and foremost about the parent's inner transformation. You know, it is really understanding that parenting is not about raising of the child as much as it is the raising of the parent. You know, if we can quickly understand that this is why we enter the parenting journey, to grow, to transform, and to create inner shifts, only then will we be able to embark upon the journey with mindfulness and awareness, and we will be able to answer the invitations our children offer to us with a sense of openness and willingness to transform. You know, we mistakenly assume that the parenting journey is about the raising of the child. And the quicker we understand that it is about our internal transformation, the better we will be in making this journey and creating within this journey true mutual restoration, kinship, and a union between parent and child.
And if I will conclude, if you permit me to interject one idea, if we indeed succeeding to enter this process of becoming a true parent and we will create this very solid, substantially beautiful unit between ourselves and our children, then school life will be so much easier. It will not be a struggle where a child comes to school with the problems of his or her parents, and will be much more open and much more energetic to study, to progress, and become a very fulfilled citizen.
Absolutely. Very well put. You know, our children are often burdened by our emotional baggage, and we need to release them from this burden. But the only way we can do that is if we begin to pay attention to our unfulfilled needs and begin to answer our own needs on our own time rather than imposing these needs onto our children.
I will profoundly thank you, Dr. Shefali. I hope maybe sometime we will continue on the subject, because I have some other questions regarding specificity of the profession of special gifted children or some children who have some special needs issues. This is an endless subject, and I cannot imagine a better book, a better investment for our children, our future generation, than this beautiful writing. I thank you, Dr. Shefali Sabari, to share her time, her skill, her thoughts, and her own ideas. Until soon, I wanted to wish all of my listeners and thank BBS for another wonderful opportunity to have my program. And with this note, I will be saying goodbye to Dr. Shefali Sabari, and I will say hello to my next program next Tuesday, and it will be just very innovative, another exciting Lunar Life. With all of my wishes, goodbye. Thank you.